Fred Lonberg Holm is a versatile cellist who is well known for his free jazz improvisations. Fred is constantly performing with one of his main groups, the Valentine Trio or the Lightbox Orchestra, as well as any number of ad hoc ensembles. In addition to performing, Fred is also a composer whose works have been performed across the globe. As a session musician, Fred has played on a number of well-known records by artists ranging from Wilco to Calafone, Supertrunk, and many more.
Thank you.
welcome to By Measure. For those who don't know, you're a very versatile cellist who plays everything from jazz to experimental, klezmer, classical, anything like that. How do the musicians that you collaborate with on a regular basis influence your own work?
Wow, that's a pretty introspective kind of, you know, a higher level of introspection than I probably really obviously everybody influences everybody, and the music that I get to play changes the way I think about that music, mm-hmm. and then maybe things changes or gives me more of an insight into other connections with other music. So you know, over the years, like, I mean, you said klezmer, but that's kind of a brief mm-hmm. fling. Or I was working with some people who were in klezmer bands at one time, but I haven't played a thing that mm-hmm. would even be remotely called klezmer in forever. Jazz, I joke sometimes and tell people I'm not a jazz musician. I play with jazz musicians, mm-hmm. you know. And
what would you say you are then?
Man, you know, that's a problem right there that I don't have a good answer for. That. I'm a cello player, mm-hmm. I guess. But, you know, I started more interested in the sound of the cello mm-hmm. Before I took cello lessons. You know, we just happened to have a cello kicking around the house. It had been abandoned there. And mm-hmm. so when I was really little, I thought it was cool. And my dad was making other stringed instruments with no knowledge of how stringed instruments are made, mm-hmm. or any even the basics of, you know, fretboard, you know, they put frets on at just random places. I don't know. Anyway, and so all my toys were kind of string weird things, and I also, my parents really liked anything that made sounds, and mm-hmm. so I'm kind of a sound, you know, the only place that I really teach is in the sound art department at mm-hmm. the Art Institute, you know, so I was never really music in that way. I like sounds, and yeah. so you know, I play the cello, and I've been through a whole bunch of different things that have given me some degree of technical ability, mm-hmm. you know, but I wouldn't say like I'm the best cello player I know by any stretch, but I'm lucky enough to have sort of the facility to play a lot of different things, and I like to play a lot of different things, and I like to hang out with musicians and make music, you know, mm-hmm. as a community activity. And so,
I was reading that I think you got your first pickup and amp like when you were 12.
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
And I found that really interesting because most classically trained musicians don't ever experiment with these sounds so early.
Especially in those days.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I went to Juilliard pre-college, and I was the only mm-hmm. cello player at the school that, as far as I knew, that had a pickup, definitely in the mm-hmm. pre-college, and everybody would look at that like, what is that, and how can you put that on there, mm-hmm. and whoa, you know, my parents had a lot of friends that were probably would really be called jazz musicians and avant-garde mm-hmm. composers, and a bunch of my adopted older brother was a sort of experimental dancer, and mm-hmm. And so I knew about this stuff. And when I was little, it was like, that's the yeah. coolest thing, man. That's what I really want. And I really liked synthesizers and electric music in general. And I even had a really corny, I still have it, a record of Julian Lloyd Webber. Andrew Lloyd Webber's brother playing Paganini caprices on electric cello, you know, mm-hmm. when I was really little. You know, we already had an amp around the house, and so I got pick up and, you know.
Do you think you would be in doing as much like experimental or improv music if you hadn't been exposed when you were little? Do you think you would have found it anyway?
You know, I don't know. It's so hard to say, but yeah, when I was 12 or so, I took a kind of a jazz composing and arranging course. Mm-hmm. And one of the assignments was to write kind of a head chart tune thing, and I didn't know what to do, and so I just did what John Cage would do or something, and I put some chords that I liked in a hat, and I drew them out, and the order that I drew them out was the changes for the tune, and then I made up a melody that kind of went with this mishmash of, and that all yeah. seemed like a perfectly reasonable way, because that's how the big boys did it, right? You know,
yeah.
So you know, anyway, I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't been exposed to that, but, you know, but definitely it's mm-hmm. not even, I don't really wonder.
Yeah.
Except for sometimes, well, man, I could have maybe, you know, had a normal life as some kind of, you know, systems administrator or something. And
that would be
great.
No.
I'd be so happy. I don't know. But yeah, I really have no idea.
How was your, like, classical training? Well, I mean, you have a really good technique and, like, you can play very well. Okay. Do you think, how was it when you were younger, like, getting training and combining the two? Like, my classical teachers would have been on my case if I was doing extended technique kind of stuff or making strange sounds yet.
Well, like, my first really serious teacher probably didn't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. And then my other teacher, the one at Juilliard and then at Manhattan School, where I went for a couple of years after with her, she knew and she was encouraging. And she mm-hmm. used to have me even sometimes do a little solo free improvised thing for other students to mm-hmm. try to encourage them to
be
a little, but she was kind of wacky, you know? So, you know, no, there was not that much of a bias or stigma about it. And I was playing in, mm-hmm. you know, I probably developed my own stigma against jazz somewhere around 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I realized that, that I couldn't tell a good when I couldn't tell when I was playing well from when I was playing badly, and so then I had to stop doing that for a while because mm-hmm. people would say that was great, and I think that was terrible, or I think that was great, people say that was terrible, you know. And so,
do you mean like the technical side was bad, or your improvisation, like what you were
just
doing?
Just the experience of, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, I was in this kind of creative octet, and it was just in Wilmington, Delaware, a small enough town where, mm-hmm. like, the shopping mall would have a kind of a day of music, and mm-hmm. then the local radio station would broadcast it live, mm-hmm. you know, and then I played, and I thought my solo was terrible, and then people were like, man, that was so great, and I was like, oh, I don't get this music at all. I'm going to only do rock, and for a long time I did classical music and rock, mm-hmm. and electronic music, but nothing with mm-hmm. with sort of the jazz aesthetic. And jazz in the 80s was sort of a dirty word, or mm-hmm. like a fuck that, you know.
Yeah.
I still don't like the vibraphone, you know. but then in the late 80s I sort of rediscovered the interesting, or got to understand it mm-hmm. better. So
yeah. But when did you start getting into pedals and doing effects
from
the very beginning? How did you get your first pedal?
I won it in a raffle at the local music store.
Wow.
It was a wah-wah pedal, and I abused that thing so bad. But I mean, I have one like it. Mm-hmm. It was a basic Color Sound Jimi Hendrix, mm-hmm. you know, and I hung out at the guitar store mm-hmm. all the time. I mean, I was sort of like, you know, like a pest there.
Did you bring your cello in? And
sometimes, but I would just play other things. Mm-hmm. And they got to like me because, I discovered one morning, I got there and the store had been broken into and they hadn't arrived yet. And so I called I knew mm-hmm. how to get hold of the manager, you know, and hey, the door's kicked in. And then they started liking me more. And then they would let me actually borrow synthesizers from the store and take them home for a couple of days and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And
seems
so
it was like a good relationship then.
It was great. So, but anyway, and they had some store raffle went right after, you know, maybe I was 13 or mm-hmm. so, and I won a wah-wah pedal, and was exciting. And but oh man, the early days, then I got a phase shifter and just the worst, the things that I don't really use at all.
What would you say you use the most right now?
Ooh. Well, I mean, there's no one most, but I mean, I right now I'm using a ring modulator and mm-hmm. and a octave, polyoctave generator mm-hmm. kind of thing, and a big loop pedal, a Boomerang 3, and a little Ditto, and I like filters, but right now I don't have one in my chain, but I did until actually the tour with Ballester, I had one, but I just took mm-hmm. it out of the box since I got home. But overdrive, don't really like distortion, don't like can't with as you know, probably compression isn't very useful. Don't like chorus or flange. Anyway, and wah-wah pedals. I have a stop wah that I like. It's a sort of like wah filters, but you don't adjust them with a foot treadle. You just turn them on and off, and you can adjust them with a knob. And I use that sometimes. But yeah, the volume pedal is my favorite pedal.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, I'm still getting the hang of it.
I am. If there's one pedal, if I'm going natural, I have to have a volume pedal. Dynamic range is so limited, even, you know, no matter how good your pickup and everything preamp is, it's still like impossible to be really quiet. And then if you try digging in and the band is playing loud, then you feel
sometimes your instrument is louder than
your amp. And then all of a sudden,
it's always a battle.
So the volume pedal is my favorite pedal. And it's kind of relatively transparent doesn't do much for people.
Well, you've had some really incredible teachers and mentors in the past. Is there one thing that one of them might have said to you that you always think about or come back to?
No. One thing. I mean, there's so many things. I don't know.
Or is there something that you always try to instill in your own students?
Yeah, some of them, I mean, there's a whole lot of oral tradition. I don't know, Anthony Braxton once said, and I don't know if I 100% agree, but it's worth thinking about, is he said, when you're playing a solo, you should think to yourself, I'm bad, and they're right to be digging it. But you know, but that's, you know, sometimes when you think I'm bad and they're right to be digging it, that's when you're really blowing chunks. So, or you're just playing the most banal nonsense that nobody, including Anthony Braxton, would ever want to listen to. But, you know, Feldman, and I wasn't there. It was right before he died, but he said out loud at a concert, he said, some teachers try to teach their kids how to kick ass. Some teachers try to teach their kids how to kiss ass. And me, I just try to teach my kids how to wipe their ass. But, you know, actually, it's something that Feldman said that I heard him say directly was, just because it's called a loudspeaker doesn't mean it has to. And that's, you know, there's a whole dynamic range even from the electronic world. And sometimes I say that to try to pacify people who are afraid when they see, oh, he's going to play electric cello, I'm going to get drowned. And then other times it's to tell people who think that, you know, oh, I have an amplifier, so I'm going to turn it to 10 and, you know, and try to commune with the heavens, as one person told me. And I was like, well, you know, the gods can listen really well. You don't have to shout at them.
True.
if that's your goal, you know, I tell you, the celestial mind is capable of hearing the smallest sound. But yeah, no, I, you know, Benita Marcus, who was also a pretty important teacher to me, she once said, if it works, it's obsolete. And I think about that and try to remind students of that. Yeah. And, my grandmother always said, don't work too hard. I always think of that too. But
I think my grandmother says the opposite.
Well, my grandmother was a special case. Yeah. So. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you've been in your current practice space and workspace, I think, did you say 10 years?
Well, not in that form. In that form, about 7 years, 8 years.
What do you really like about your space?
This was my space, actually. Originally, this was its own room, and the kitchen was over there. And it was great because I could walk in and out of the kitchen in my study, but...
Well, it's nice that you have such like a closed off little area for your own space. What else do you like about it? What else have you tried to create in your workspace? Like, is there a certain feeling you need, or like gear that you need, or light, or anything like that?
I'd like more light. I have, you know, I mean, I have what I have. You know, I try not to worry about what I could have that I don't have. But, you know, there's a couple of amplifiers, so I can work on pedals, not amps that I would use for gigs necessarily. And there's the rest of, like, you know, sort of minimal recording gear and mm-hmm. other outboard stuff. And
so just having easy access to everything.
Having it all in one space and being mm-hmm. able to work and having enough floor space to set up to yeah. play is great. And then, you know, but yeah, there's the desk and then there's the computer for editing and mixing. Mm-hmm. And then there's the open space for playing music. Mm-hmm. I have a drum kit in there. I'm trying to,
oh.
I don't know if you saw, there's a bunch of drums mm-hmm. in there and a sewing machine because mm-hmm. I like to sew.
Oh, I didn't know.
You didn't see the sewing machine?
That's, well, I saw the sewing machine, but I didn't know that it was. What do you make?
Yeah, but everything from, I made the cover for the mm-hmm. bed that the dog is on right now, but I made my wallet.
Wow.
But out of a bicycle inner tube. Mm-hmm. I made a bunch of little bags and sacks and cases for mm-hmm. myself, amp covers. Made a pair of director seat, you know, the seat things. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
fix things, hem things, peg pants, mm-hmm. made hats, I made that little stuffed cat thing.
Oh, yeah.
I made a few of those for Christmas for different people this year, made other finger puppets, mm-hmm. and, you know.
Is that something you do, like, to get away from music, or just...
Actually, it's partly something I do to when I'm listening to records.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Especially records that I'm not particularly, mm-hmm. you know, it's like people on the road are always, you know, giving mm-hmm. you records. And every now and then there's one that's like, oh, that's great. But a lot mm-hmm. of times it's like, eh. But, you know, you feel like you should at least give it a spin. So I mm-hmm. put on a bunch of records I got on the road and I sew and I listen. Or I just listen to music that I want to listen to. And mm-hmm. it's sometimes, you know, it's a kind of thing where I can listen and mm-hmm. not feel like I'm just being a, mm-hmm. maybe a Calvinist Protestant thing of, like, you know, that just to sit in a chair and I'm just listening to music all day because that's what I have to do, and it just always feels right.
Hands.
I'm doing something, I'm making mm-hmm. something, and I'm listening at the same time,
yeah.
and you know, so you know, I don't know how people
so
do that.
Productive though, then, because yeah,
neurotic, but I don't know how people do it when they just, you know, because I know a lot of people who listen to music all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them seem to listen to my. Probably the biggest music fans that I know are people that are like painters or computer programmers mm-hmm. or do some kind of non-sound thing. And mm-hmm. then they just have music on all the time.
All day,
right,
yeah.
right. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, usually I'm making sounds so I can't listen to other people's mm-hmm. records. And then if I stop and I sit there for several hours listening to records, I feel like I'm not doing anything
mm-hmm.
in it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm being like a normal person by mm-hmm. I have this kind of activity. And
yeah.
I like to, I don't have it set up there. I well, there's a little station for soldering and electrical
mm-hmm.
fooling around, but also another hobby is stained glass and
so
that,
listening
to
music. Do you do that in your studio as well?
No, because of the lead,
yeah.
too much lead, so
mm-hmm.
in the basement here.
Mm-hmm.
But,
that's great.
But, you know, put on music there too.
Mm-hmm.
Do that and listen. I don't know.
Well, at the end of every interview, I always ask each musician what they think would be a good question to ask a different musician, or a question that you've never been asked that you wish you could answer. Or something you feel like people always forget to ask about.
Well, you asked several questions that I've never been asked before, so.
Oh, good.
So, right there, you know, we're already on that. I mean, everybody's got their sort of dark internal questions about themselves and about the world and about
mm-hmm.
things like that, and like, you know, it's even more awkward to sometimes voice the question than to answer the question. So,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I mean, I like to think that there's some point to what I do,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes I wonder, you know, and no one has ever asked me, you know, what's the point of this anyway?
Mm.
But that's almost kind of a rude question just to ask someone,
yeah.
what's the point of what you do, you know? It's
mm-hmm.
like, but You know, and it's easy. There's so many easy answers mm-hmm. to, oh, well, it makes people happy. Oh, it makes people think. Oh, it gives them an experience. Oh, it's a trip. Oh, it's mm-hmm. a, you know, but really, you know, I mean, you know, it's a constantly, I think a lot of people, if they're honest, are always wondering, what's mm-hmm. the point of this anyway? Why, mm-hmm. what I've devoted my life to this thing and, mm-hmm. you know, the best you can say is that other people, some people say that they get something out of it. Mm-hmm. So you're doing something for other, and mostly what I think humans do is do things for other humans. So, mm-hmm. you know, but it seems like there's much more grand and glorious mm-hmm. things than making ephemeral sounds that can be captured maybe in on a machine, but not really experienced the way they mm-hmm. were when.
Well, that's a great question. I'll let you know somebody. What the next person says.
What's the point? Yeah. Tell Fred I said, fuck you.
exactly.
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, otherwise, yeah, I don't know. Pretty much any question is been asked or whatever.
Well, where can we find you online? Do you have a website?
Oh, I do. I think I haven't paid GoDaddy for 5 years, so I think it's still up there, but I don't even go anymore. But people tell me that they wonder why it still says Bush sucks or something. I keep a Facebook page that where mm-hmm. I actually post things, and I have Fred's Gigs at Blogspot, but I'm mm-hmm. pretty bad about just coordinating my life and trying to play music, and
that's
for me it is. For some people, it's mm-hmm. not. They do a great job of having a really promotion, coherent public face, and I'm not one of those people. But yeah, the Facebook page, it seems like it's a lot of traffic, and mm-hmm. so I have a website that people have to actually consciously click to go to URL mm-hmm. when they're already sort of hanging out at this big shopping mall, mm-hmm. and, you know, and. Yeah, I don't pay Facebook anything, even though they keep trying to get me to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they give me a little free space, and mm-hmm. some people pay attention.
Well, perfect. I'll put that up so people can find you on there.
I do appreciate that.
But... All right. Well, thanks a lot. Sure. It was great.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you.
To view photos of Fred's workspace, visit bymeasure.blogspot.com.